This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Ultimate HA7 Joint Formula from Purity Products. Ultimate HA7 features the joint-boosting benefits of hyaluronic acid. HA works like a shock absorber, helping to cushion and soothe your joints. Plus, this HA also hydrates your skin. It's powerful support for your joints, cartilage, skin, and connective tissues. So call 800-983-1154 and get a full-size bottle of HA7 for only $9. And you also get free shipping. Call now to claim your $9 trial bottle of HA7 with free shipping. 1-800-983-1154. These move fast, so call now. 1-800-983-1154. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to focus on the health benefits of xylitol. And with me is really one of the world-class experts on the subject of xylitol. He's Nathan Jones, and Nathan Jones is CEO and founder of Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, and Clear is one of the leading and most innovative manufacturers of xylitol products. And you've heard about Clear. I've talked about Clear in relationship to respiratory health and dental health. We're going to do a deep dive on that subject today. So welcome, Nathan. It's a pleasure having you on the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on the program.
Oh, indeed. Okay, well, so you know, first of all, what is xylitol? So then we can get a little backstory on how you got involved with xylitol.
Well, xylitol is a sugar. I mean, it's a simple sugar. It's a 5-carbon sugar as opposed to a 6-carbon sugar that most of us are familiar with. Sucrose, glucose, fructose, those are 6-carbon sugars. Sorbitol, mannitol, maltitol, those are 6-carbon sugars. And those are the sugars that feed most of the bacteria that's in our microbiome. And, you know, and xylitol is a 5-carbon sugar. Some of the bacteria in our microbiome that we don't really want, they can't eat that xylitol.
And so it tricks the bacteria. It's kind of like a Trojan horse kind of thing. It entices the bacteria. They go, here's something sweet. This is just like a Tootsie Roll here, but it's a poison pill.
Very much so, because to them it looks like sugar, but they eat it and they try to, you know, they ingest it. Mm-hmm. They try to eat it and they can't metabolize it, so they end up kicking it back out of the cell, which takes a lot more energy. Then they eat it again, they kick it back out, they eat it, they kick it out, back out again, and in the end what they end up doing is starving themselves.
Okay, so it can act as, I mean, we tend to, in mouthwashes, nasal sprays, we put in all kinds of things like, antibiotic ingredients, antimicrobial chemical ingredients, and we try to poison the bad bugs. Periodontal disease, we use antibiotics. So this is an approach, it's sort of a slow, more organic, natural approach to suppression rather than eradication or prevention.
That's a good way to put it. But what they're really doing is, when you use, let's say, chlorhexidine, or when you use a alcohol mouthwash when I say an alcohol mouthwash, I mean one that's over 20% alcohol. What you're doing is you're killing everything. And what xylitol does is, for some reason, it's specific only to the bacteria that create acid.
The so-called pathogenic bacteria.
Pathogenic bacteria.
Okay.
The strep mutans, the strep sanguine, in your upper airway, it's the strep pneumo, the H flu, the MCAT. The bacteria that really thrive off of these 6-carbon sugars, they can't really use the xylitol.
Okay, so we'll get more into the mode of action and the applicability and what some of the products are like. But give us the backstory on that, because it actually predates you, because you're like a second-generation xylitol guy.
Well, I am a second generation, I'm probably a third or fourth. No. So the story behind xylitol goes back, 100-some-odd years, but xylitol is a very common sugar. They use it. They started using it in World War II. They first discovered it, and what it was really back in the 1800s. But they didn't start using it until World War II in Finland, because they didn't have any sugar, and, you know, they kept sinking all these ships bringing sugar, so they really didn't have any sugar.
But they had a lot of birch trees.
Yes, they did. And so they started making xylitol.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't until the mid-1960s.
As their sweetener.
Yeah. So during World War II, they were using xylitol as a sweetener because they couldn't get sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So what they started doing is...
It's a pretty nice sweetener. You take tree bark,
And you put it to use through chemistry.
And that's exactly what they were doing. And 20 years after the war, the dentists that were out there, they were like, hey, why are these kids that grew up during the war, they're not getting cavities? And so that's when they started doing research. And I believe you've met Dr. Mackinnon.
Yeah.
But Dr. Mackinnon was the very first dentist that started noticing this, and he started doing research studies in 1968.
He's a Finnish guy.
He's a finisher. No.
Yes.
But he is from Finland. And, right. and but he started doing the research. The very first study that he did in 1968, it was a 3-day-long study, and in 3 days, they used xylitol. They reduced the weight of the plaque in people's mouth by over 50% in 3 days. So after that, they started doing more studies looking at how it prevents tooth decay.
So this actually became national policy in Finland, which was a country that until, I guess, the advent of xylitol, it actually rivaled Great Britain. You know, they have these pictures of, Austin Powers, you know, his bad teeth. But the Finnish were like a close second to the people in the United Kingdom in terms of dental health. They had all rotten teeth and their dental expenses were huge. And they have socialized medicine there. So it was a real drain on the economy, all these cavities and dental visits and extractions and what have you.
It was, and they started implementing xylitol programs in their schools in the 80s.
Right.
And a lot of those expenses went down. I mean, Dr. Allenin, Pentti Allenin, he's actually done a lot of studies showing how economically feasible and how cheap it is to, I mean, you can for $20 or $30 a year, you can implement xylitol gum chewing programs in the schools that are going to get rid of tooth decay. It's not that expensive. People think it's going to be expensive, but really you're talking about $30 a kid per year.
But that's a command and control economy. It's essentially sort of a socialist country, what, 5 million people. So when the directive comes down from the federal dental authority or whatever they have over there to give the kids, you know, xylitol gum and little pastiches and xylitol toothpaste and, you know, give it out as freebies at the lunch counter, it happens, right?
Correct.
Okay. So we need an initiative like that in the United States, clearly. But, you know, freedom of choice being what it is, we have to take the initiative ourselves as parents and as individuals to opt for this. It's basically it's a capitalist commercial economy, and it's not going to be a government program. You know, unless you are successful prevailing with the powers that be. You've got a Washington lobbyist?
We are working on right now with a group in Georgia, and we're going to provide them, I can't remember how much, but it's not a small amount of gum for them to do a pilot program in a couple of their schools.
Okay.
Because if we can show, because what the pushback that we get here in the U.S. isn't that it doesn't work.
Right.
It's that, oh, if kids chew gum in school, it's going to make a mess.
Okay.
That's the pushback.
Right.
And first of all, it's a crazy pushback because I don't care what the mess is. If you're going to stop kids from getting tooth decay, it's probably going to be worth it.
Right.
Cleaning off a couple of
Maybe
more
they should
things.
Worry more about the knives and the guns and the vaping, you know, and
that is true. What they're trying to do in the Georgia thing is because what Dr. Allenin, what he actually showed in all the studies he did, is that the kids, as long as they're not afraid of being persecuted, prosecuted, getting in trouble by the teacher for chewing gum, they're not going to stick it under their desk. They're going to go put it in the trash can.
Right.
They stick it under their desk when they keep being afraid that the teacher...
It's a clandestine thing.
Yeah, when they want it to be clandestine.
Okay.
And so we're doing a program in Georgia right now with a couple of schools where they're going to implement a xylitol gum chewing program, and what they're going to look at is what the dental costs are and the days missed for dental visits for this school, for the three schools that they're doing in it as opposed to the other schools.
So when I said you were second generation, what I'm referring to is you have a sort of a family legacy around xylitol. And so tell us about your dad, Dr. Lon Jones, that's his name?
Yeah. Well, my dad is a great guy. He's retired now. You know, he does whatever he's 80. I'm not going to say anymore, but he's 80 years old. And when I ask him what he's doing, I'll call him and say, hey, Dad, how's it going? What are you doing? And what he answers is, whatever the hell I want to do. I'm 80 years old.
But he has a history as a last of a dying breed kind of doctor, right?
He is, and that's how I ended up getting into it is because, and you've met him and talked to him, but you know, the story and how I got into it and how you got into it goes back into the 90s when he was a family physician practicing out in West Texas, and he had a bunch of kids that were having recurrent ear infections, and he understood.
So this is away from the major academic centers. That's part of the ingredient of the success of this, I think, is that it's a little bit of a populist grassroots thing. If he had been like a top researcher at Mayo Clinic or Tufts, he wouldn't have gotten anywhere, I don't think. He
no.
was a bit of a renegade.
I don't think he would have, because what he started doing is he had all these kids that were using, that had ear infections, and the standard treatment, even to this day, doctors will hand out antibiotics like candy if they're going out to little kids and they have ear infections. And most of it they say is, well, their mom is pressuring me to give them something. And the thing is that my dad, even when I was a child in the 70s, my dad understood the damages that antibiotics, mm-hmm. systemic antibiotics,
he was ahead
caused.
Of his time.
And even when we were sick, I don't ever remember him as a child giving me antibiotics.
Right.
I remember, you know, him saying, and if you're sick...
How many siblings did you have?
Way too... No, I'm not kidding. I'm kidding. 14.
Okay. So he had quite the little bit of living laboratory to experiment with.
Absolutely. There was a lot of us. And we played in... I mean, well, never mind. I won't get into that, but... We lived out in the farm country in Idaho.
You sort of validated the hygiene hypothesis. You were exposed to germs and dirt, and that was you know, sort of raised in a way that I think so few city kids in an antiseptic environment are raised, and then they get sick all the time, and then they get treated with things that damage their microbiome.
No, that is correct. And so my dad, he started looking around and trying to find something other than antibiotics to treat these kids with, and what kept coming up over and over and over were these dental research studies. He'd go into PubMed and he'd query.
This is before the internet.
Well, no, this was the beginning of the internet.
Okay, so he was an early adopter.
This was in 1998,
okay.
So the internet was here,
yeah.
But it was pretty early, but it was right
dial
when PubMed
AOL,
came
AOL,
up.
AOL,
yeah,
that right.
Exactly. But he went on PubMed and he kept querying preventing ear infections, and what kept coming up was all these dental research studies.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because the dental research studies with xylitol that have been going back for 30 years.
That was established.
That was established. But what hadn't ever been really taken into consideration was that the kids that used the xylitol gum, not only were they not getting cavities, they were getting 42% fewer ear infections just by chewing gum with xylitol. That was published. And
just a side benefit.
A side benefit. And that was actually published. There's a paper written on that published in the British Medical Journal in 1998, right after my dad was reading all these studies. And when that article was published, Uhari and Kontio Kari at the University of Turku, they actually went in and did a little
research.
Which is in Finland. Yeah, that's in Finland. But they actually went in and did some research and looked at how and why they were getting fewer ear infections. And what they came up with was that the xylitol binds up on the strep pneumo, the H flu, the MCAT, the pathogens that live in your nose, and that cause all these upper respiratory infections, ear infections, and makes them so they can't adhere to the tissue.
And there's a continuum from the oral cavity to the ears via the eustachian tubes, and typically the bacteria colonize upwards and into the ears so they communicate. So that's why on a plane, you know, when the pressure changes, you can sort of press your nose, everybody has that experience, your ears pop, you know, as you close your mouth. And that's because you're blowing through the eustachian tubes. But that's actually kind of a superhighway for bacteria to travel into the inner ear, or the middle ear, where otitis media occurs.
Yeah, no, and my dad understood that. So when all these kids were getting ear infections, and he read all the studies about chewing gum, his next thought was, well, ear infections start in the nose. How do I get the xylitol into their nose?
So even better, put it right into the nasal passages.
So he bought some xylitol, mixed it with ocean saline, started squirting it in their nose, started washing out their nose, and the kids stopped getting
He couldn't
sick.
Order it from Clear. It wasn't on the market then.
No, at that point I was out on an oil rig in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico.
That was your first career?
That was my first career.
You were an underwater welder?
A commercial diver is the correct term.
So you would go down to like 300 feet or more?
I've seen 300 feet a few times.
With one of those iron helmets on? You know.
We used fiberglass.
Okay, right.
Superlight 17, Superlight 27s.
So it sounds like there was a kind of a confluence of events. Your dad had this secret sauce that he had to kind of make up himself. You were getting a little torqued out on maybe suffering the bends too much, and looking for an alternative career, And that presented itself.
It did present itself.
Okay. So this became an idea that, hey, maybe this is something that we can standardize, put into a commercially acceptable vehicle, and offer it to the public with great benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I quit my diving job at the end of 99.
Okay.
Moved back to Utah so I could live rent-free in my mom's basement. My dad didn't have a basement in Texas. Plus, if anybody here's ever been out to Texas, West Texas is not a very pretty place. I mean, it's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place. But, you know.
I think of that show about the football games. What is it called? What's it? The high school football team? The Permian,
Friday Night
the
Lights?
Permian, Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
The Permian Basin, that kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
there's nothing else to do except on a Friday night.
Right, okay.
You go to the football game. Everybody goes to the football game because there's nothing else to do.
Did you play football?
No.
Oh, okay.
My parents, they bribed me. I wanted to play football, and my mom said, there's no way you're playing football. I'll buy you a pair of tennis shoes, high tops, if you don't play football and you swim.
Well, maybe that's why you still have executive function now and you're able to run a company. It could be.
Well, that was, my mom kept saying, I don't want, people to play football. They get hurt. And if you can look at a hurt, like a concussion mm-hmm. or something, in a 6-month time frame, it's not that bad. It's when you get a concussion and you do it again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the lifetime thing. And again, my mom and my dad were very smart people.
Well, they sound like enlightened people. And, you know, your dad certainly was visionary and ahead of his time in identifying the potential of xylitol.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, is there any more research since 98 that actually validates the efficacy? We know about the dental benefits. You can talk more about the dental benefits, because actually you sent me a few studies I want to talk to you about. But what's happening on the sinus front, the ENT front?
We had a hacker take down our system 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
And I was trying to find some studies, and I couldn't access my computer. It wasn't our computers. It was actually the IT company that we contract to, but they got hacked. And everybody that was in their system, it was a, what do they call them, a ransomware, and they pay the ransom, but it takes 5 days. But
that's fun.
I started going through, and I had to go back online at my house on my computer at my home.
To reconstruct that database.
Yep. To reconstruct this. And I'm sitting there going through all these research studies on xylitol. There's actually a ton of studies coming out on xylitol in the upper airway.
Okay, good.
The University of Iowa, they started doing some research on people with cystic fibrosis 20 years ago.
Right.
And that
kind of... So there's ongoing research. Because sometimes I worry a little bit about something. It was like, oh, it's great. You know, they were talking about it. It was like really hot, like germanium. That was like hot in the 1990s. Like, it was like the bomb for everything. It was like...
What is germanium?
It's a thinking of just an example of an obscure supplement that was popular and then kind of lost its luster because they haven't done ongoing research. But you're saying that that xylitol continues to be an object of research and is being validated.
Yeah. So... The University of Iowa, their studies, they're actually re-engaging and starting to do some more studies, which is great. The University of Northwestern University is actually doing some stuff with them, looking at that. Mm-hmm. But they had some studies done comparing, Dr. Nasuli did some great studies at Georgetown comparing using a saline solution as compared to using a xylitol solution. And what they showed in that study was 36% improvement in their peak airflow in 3 weeks.
Well, that's why, the common question, I'll say, use this stuff. I'll tell my patients who have chronic sinus problems, maybe they have asthma, because I think part of the causation of asthma is the bacterial infection in your sinuses through gravity drips down and irritates your lungs. So I'll tell patients with nasal problems and seasonal allergies to use Clear. And they'll say, yeah, but I use saline. I'm fine with that. The saline does the job. Why pay maybe a little more premium price to get the xylitol in addition to the saline? Because your base is saline. You have a little more little xylitol added to that, right?
If we could take the saline out of our product, we would.
Okay.
It actually makes it a worse product because of the addition of the saline.
Oh.
But by adding the salt to it, the FDA, if you don't have a saline in it, they won't allow you to sell it because as a saline, you're a...
It's a category.
It's a category.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
So you're like a token amount of saline, right?
Yeah. But the difference is that when you use a saline spray and you spray it in your nose,
it's desiccating.
It is. It is drying. It's desiccating.
Right.
The reason why is because when you spray it in your nose, after about 30 minutes, the salt is actively transported across the nasal membrane into the tissue. And then just by osmosis, the water is going to follow it.
It pickle. It's like, it's the pickle jar phenomenon. You put like a cucumber in a pickle jar, and that's osmosis, you know, with isotonic versus, you know, hypertonic solutions. It actually pickles the pickle, and it's sort of pickling your tissue in some ways.
Well, that's, no, that's what it is. The salt goes in, the water's going to follow it.
Yeah.
And the xylitol, when you spray the xylitol in your nose, I don't want to be, you know, gross or anything, but the xylitol is non-absorbent. It's going to sit there in your snot layer, in your mucus layer. Yeah. And what's going to happen is osmotically, it's going to pull moisture out of the tissue, reducing that inflammation, opening your airway.
So that's why some people say, when I started using it, I just blew my nose like crazy. All the stuff came out.
You want all that stuff out.
You want it out.
You want it out.
Because otherwise, it's like a fetid swamp that's like a perfect culture medium for the bacteria, right?
Yes. No, that's exactly what it is. And that's, and I mean, really what it is that's more than likely, it's a biofilm buildup.
Okay. We're going to talk a little bit more about biofilms, because that's a really key concept. And in fact, I wrote an article for postgraduate medicine. I think you're familiar with the article. So it's, I talked about biofilms and their role in disease. So let's apply that biofilm model in part two to dental cavities and periodontal disease. By the way, periodontal disease more commonly these days is the cause for tooth loss than cavities. And also for chronic sinus infections, and maybe, you know, for wound care in other parts of the body. That's a theme in part two. We're talking to Nate Jones. Nate Jones is CEO and founder of Clear Inc., X-L-E-A-R. Tricky name. You know, when do you pronounce an X as a C?
Because it clears your nose.
Okay. But, you know, think of xylophone, you know, okay. But anyway, it's clear.
It comes because it clears your nose, and my dad, you know, it's really paying homage to my dad because he named the product before we ever took it to market. It clears your nose. The X is for xylitol, and the X in Finnish is actually pronounced as a kh.
Oh, there you go. Well, there's a rationale. But I still call it X-L-E-A-R.
Everybody does X-L-E-A-R. Everybody calls it X-L-E-A-R, X-L-E-A-R, Z-L-E-A-R. We get all that.
All right. So when we return, more on the subject of the science behind xylitol, it's very plausible, and it's being recognized, you know, not just at the health food store counter and in popular drug stores, but also in major university centers as they continue xylitol research. We'll be back with more. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.